everybody. Welcome back to The Therapy Show. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Wendy Dunford.
Hello.
Hi. We're here, we're back, and we're doing more stuff. And it's an interesting... You know, I feel like people are going to send a lot of feedback about how a lot of these topics resonate with me or you or both of us. And I'm here to tell you that's actually kind of a good thing, because it just means everybody's got stuff or can relate to it in some way or another. And barring last week's Doritos discussion, most of the time it's pretty educational. So here we are to do this again. Let's get right to it. We got an email that sparked some conversation and some thoughts. This came from somebody called Name Not Important. All right. So take that for what it is. Here it is. Hello, Wendy and Scott. I have a son who is at age five, I discovered is not my biological son. Boom. It's like Saturday afternoon special here. To keep things brief, I gave reconciled with his mother. I think he just means he reconciled with his mother. Or we have, yeah. I don't know why he wrote gave. Autocorrect. And we are a family, and he is completely my son in both the legal and in the love kind of ways. My problem is, he doesn't know. He'll be turning 13 soon, and I'm completely terrified of telling him and somehow losing his love. We are close in every other way, and he is a sensitive kid. Does he actually need to know? Would his life be any worse for not knowing? If I should tell him... how do I even tell him something like that? When I say he's sensitive, I know he has inherited much of his mother's anxiety problems, as much as I am scared for my own selfish reasons, or of not wanting to lose my special relationship with him. I am also scared he is the type that will take it harder than I can really understand right now. Thanks for your help. Again, name unimportant is the way we're going to sign this. So that's pretty rough.
Yeah.
But it leads to a bigger conversation we'll get to in a second. But let's actually address this particular case. Seems like his heart's in the right place. The only real selfish side of this that he has is that he doesn't, you know, want to mess up this relationship. He really obviously cares for this kid. Yeah. But that's a big secret.
And
that's
one of those big family
secrets, man.
That's a lot of years to not.
That's almost 10 years of not telling him. 2 years shy of 10 years.
Right.
So... what do you do? Does he sit down with him one of these days and just go, dude, we got to have a talk? And then I don't know what that sounds like to a 13, 12-year-old.
Right. Well, okay, so it's got to be, it's such an individual decision. I can't just say you should do it or you shouldn't do it. But I think some things to think about is that, you know, he's already sort of asking some of those questions, which are, you know, is this good for him?
Yeah.
And the other question I would ask is, what happens when he finds out? Or when you do tell him, is it going to be worse because you didn't tell him before? And you kind of have to know the kid, right? If he's really sensitive or really, I mean, because you don't know in his head, he might be like, man, I am nothing like my dad. Or I feel really, you know, you think you're really close and maybe you really are. And I hope so. That'd be great. But you also don't know the inner dialogue. So it's possible he's feeling different. Mm. And that might be a helpful thing to hear. I do know, I mean, we grew up with, you know, half whiteys, half Koreans. And
yes, we did.
You know, we still do this thing. And Adam loves to laugh at this, but we'll say that like Misha got something from mom. Like Misha picks off her kids' plates.
Yeah.
And mom does, and I do. And we're like, oh, we got that from mom. As you know, obviously you learn stuff, but also like genetically or, you
but
know,
behaviorally, yeah. The notion that it's all genetic is kind of funny.
Right,
that,
but we'll make some comment that is clearly a genetic link between Misha and mom, and there's no way that's genetic.
No, it's not possible. Well, I mean, not in any direct connective way.
Totally, right. But we talk that way, and so I know families talk that way. We just have the, oh yeah, hello, you obviously don't have that.
Kim's genetic. Sister has an adopted little boy who is the spitting image of her husband, who is not the kid's father.
Yeah, he really is.
Things like that, that's weird.
Right. You start to look like each other. It's like couples. When they get old, they start to look the same.
Uh-huh. The same old pruny looking. Yeah.
People have asked Adam and I for brother and sister before.
Really?
We're like, weird. Maybe. Just kidding. Anyway, so, I mean, I think there's...
He is from the South.
You have to be really, really sensitive to the kid's needs and maybe fill it out. That is tricky, but... there is something, I mean, if this were 30 years ago, you wouldn't even think about this.
No.
You would absolutely pretend you were his dad yep. biologically the rest of your life and die. Take that to your grave.
Happened all the time.
All the time. So there's this, apparently there are conferences where directors of funeral homes gather and talk and do training.
Everyone has a conference.
Everyone's
now.
Got a con. Mm-hmm. And I bet that's really funny. It's a really yeah, fun one.
It's a hoot.
It's great. Well, and everyone's favorite. So I heard this from a guy who does trainings at them about grief and loss and, you know, how to work with families. And he said that, you know, the favorite time of any of these conferences is they call it funeral homes after hours. It's always like a segment. And then everyone gets to share the crap that happens after hours.
Like all the weird things they've
yeah,
seen.
Yeah, not like dead bodies walking around, which is what I thought he was going to say. But
right, but no, but it could be things like, no. Oh, that time I spilled old Bill Jensen's guts on the floor by accident.
Yeah, no, not like that at all. It is the phone calls they get after hours, which is, you know, I knew Bill Thompson 30 years ago. I had his son, he never knew.
Oh gosh.
The son wants to just see him before he's buried. We don't want to disrupt the family.
I wouldn't have thought they would have heard things.
Oh
like that.
Boy. That's all they get after hours.
Really?
So there's a ton of after hour visiting going on.
Oh, because, I thought it was like, I drank formaldehyde by accident.
Yeah,
no,
not
Saturday.
That. No, it's basically that people have these secrets. You know, the other thing is, you know, sort of finding when someone passes away, finding old letters that they've kept for 40 years from something or other, or, you know, and in fact, there was one story about a woman who put a huge X on a shoebox and it said, give to, and it named her sister and it was duct taped and only her sister was allowed to open it.
After she died.
And the sister was instructed to just burn it, but she couldn't let go. And they were old love letters that she'd been pining for this guy for 40 years, but been happily married, you know? So all the secrets. So generationally, this guy is in, you know, kind of a different territory, I think, because he's contemplating breaking family silence and social norms and all those things. I think because there's way more freedom and more realness going on. And so anyway, he's got to decide ultimately, is this better for the kid or not? But there will come a day.
It's going to come out.
Yeah. So you got to figure out.
It always does.
And you know, when they're 15 and ticked and whatever, is that the best time?
Yeah. I mean, there's still things I think our grandmother on mom's side, Grandma Wilson, I am sure there are things from her life that we don't know because there's all kinds of silence about that first marriage and all kinds of weirdness. No one ever talks about it.
Ever.
I guarantee there's something up. So don't.
And the only reason we knew about the boyfriend having a fling with some lady in the rest home. Everyone was caught wearing nothing but cardigan
sweaters.
That was
the best thing ever. We open up this door, this old folks home. That's what it was, like care assisted center, living thing. Opens the door. And this guy is famous for like bow tie, cardigan sweater.
Just very
button
classy.
Down shirt, classy, always perfect hair. He's of a generation that's just the way you looked all the time. Yeah. He looked out of the 40s, this guy. Open up the door, standing there with all of that on except for...
No, only the cardigan.
Only
nothing
the cardigan.
Else.
No pants, nothing.
As well as the date in the room was
standing there
in
buck
a cardigan.
Naked. Like, what are you people doing in here?
That's where the most sex is happening in America, is in the rest homes.
Forget about teenagers. Forget about college.
Yeah.
It's happening at the...
It's as awkward as it is for teenagers.
At Winter Springs down the road.
Yeah, wow. And I think the only reason we knew about that, which, by the way, I was told last because I'm the youngest.
Yeah, you were in like high school.
Yeah,
or junior
no
high
one
then.
Needs that image, and I still can't get it out of my head, even though I didn't hear it originally.
I was there. I went.
You weren't there the moment.
I was
Shut
there.
Up.
I was at the door. I didn't really know what I was witnessing. Oh my at God. First, I just kind of went, "Wait, what? Oh my gosh!" I was there with Mom and John, or not John. Who would have been there?
Dad.
Maybe Dad.
Yeah, he died after Grandma.
Okay, you're right.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, you're right, because that was 98. I was there, yeah. I saw this whole
thing.
So
you were with Kim.
Yeah, and then I was there when Grandma, I guess, got wind of it or whatever, and she was so mad.
Yeah, she's about to bee slap her.
She was pissed.
Yeah.
I've never seen her like that.
Well, yeah. You're still jealous when you're old.
I guess.
And she had her brain, and Byron at that point had kind of lost it.
He had not, but that was the whole point, is he had lost it to the point that he's standing naked and doesn't know it at a door.
Yeah, and turns out that woman, she was a former dancer. Yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
She this was not her first endeavor. So so grandma
was
so
weird.
Really mad. Anyway, but I think so also weird. Like how do you hide that when everyone's witnessing? And generationally, like people talk more. There's just a lot.
Yeah.
And now we can Facebook it, baby.
Yeah, no, stuff comes out. Oops. Stuff comes out whether you want it to or not now.
And there's also just genetic testing that you get done. Mm-hmm. I mean.
Yeah, he could go. This kid could one day just, you know what could happen? Here's the scary bit.
Yeah.
Dad gets in a car accident, heaven forbid.
Yeah.
Oh, we need a blood type match. Who's going to be the closest? Let's get his sons. Oh, I'll do it. I'll volunteer. I love my dad. Mm-hmm. This blood's not the same. Yeah.
In fact, it's the opposite of
it's totally different.
Yeah.
And it explains why you're tan and he's not. Like all these things.
Explains why you're really athletic and he's clumsy.
I don't think you want to do that.
I know.
I don't think you want to do it.
I know. And I'm tempted to tell him before he's really grouchy. Because if he's 13 and he's not grouchy yet, there will come a day where he will be normally rebelling, or at least there'll be conflict. And that is no time to say, you know, the reason you feel so different is because I've been lying to you forever. And, you know, of course you're not lying. You're just deciding when is opportune time to reveal more to him about his actual life. Because then guess what? There's another dad out there.
Yeah, I wonder where that guy is.
Unless that was a donation, which I doubt.
Yeah.
That, you know, he then has that whole question of, okay, well,
even a donation's a big question.
Right. Like, do I want to meet him? Do I, you know, what do I do?
Yeah.
So
that's rough.
Maybe at 7, it would have been a better time to do it.
7 or 8. Yeah. That's what I would have done. But you know what? Now I say now more, the longer you wait, the worse it is. You do it sooner than later. Yeah. There is no perfect age. It's not like you're going to be, if I wait until he's 17, then it'll go down smooth.
Right. Uh-uh. There is some brain development options, like, you know, by 21, 22. You know, he's going to be able to empathize with your situation a little better than when you're 15 going,
sure. If everything goes great and no,
until then,
no weird curves, no strangeness happens between now and then.
No
sure.
movie episode where you get an accident and he needs your blood.
Yeah. Like a movie would do. That's where I get
totally
all my
like
ideas.
A movie.
So hopefully that helps him, but it opens up the larger issue of, I think anyway, of the way we deal with some of that stuff, even on the opposite side. So in our family, we have, like you said, half Koreans. They're all adopted. One brother, two sisters. And in one of their cases, my brother Matt and my sister Misha, the rumor was growing up, this was always talked about all the time. The folklore was that we think they might have been actually, and to this day, people still think this might be true.
I still think it too. I'm going to get their genes tested.
But everyone has this notion that they were perhaps separated at some point. They're, 6 years apart or something. They look a lot alike. They behave somewhat alike. They were not picked up in the same areas, but that isn't really.
But they were picked, he entered the orphanage the same day she was found on the bus.
She was found on the bus the same day.
Same
so that
city.
Kind of stuff is weird. And if you looked at them, you'd go, I could see.
And their dental records very similar. Their orthodontist was convinced.
Right. So.
So it's fun.
It is fun. The point is, though, we do this thing where we start, like, we should just get them tested. Why we haven't done that?
It's $100.
Yeah,
we're stupid.
Big deal. I'll pitch in.
Let's do it for Christmas.
Oh, we totally should.
Don't tell anyone.
But then, you know, everyone's also afraid to be disappointed and find out it's not.
And then who cares if they're not? Because we never thought they actually were. But
not really, but.
But it kind of ruins the fun.
But that's the whole point is you grow up and you get these labels and you get these boxes that you're placed in. I use that as an example because before the show you said boxes, and I think it's a good analogy. So there was a box firmly placed around me, which was Scott is the creative, sensitive one. Put it right on top of me, right? That now gave me a cage to which I operated in, where I just assumed that meant I'm the one that was oversensitive to everything. But he's so creative, and he can draw, and he's so smart, and all this stuff. I got that, but then he's so sensitive. I hated that label.
AKA, he's a wuss.
Yeah. Yes. That's kind of how it boils down. Matt, the hardworking one. He's not real smart, even though I think he is. But he's
not even that he's not smart, is he doesn't speak English or Korean.
And he's scrappy and he'll get the job done and he'll work harder than anybody and sweat more than anyone.
Yeah. And he can eat like a
He can eat anything team. He wants, except he had half his colon taken out. So
yeah, maybe that
he probably shouldn't. But the point is that we put him in his box. Now, his box had some good stuff and some bad stuff.
Yeah.
My sister, Tara, put in a major box.
Yeah, the scapegoat.
Much of it deserved, but still the scapegoat for a lot of stuff that wasn't on her.
The North Korean.
Yeah, we called her the North Korean. For heaven's sakes, we called her the North Korean.
If we had any education, we would have called her Kim Jong-il.
Yeah. Or if we'd have known back, I mean, who was the real threat? We'd have called her, I don't know, Russian or something else.
No, but really it was like, Matt and Misha are so nice. They must be South Korean.
Yeah, and they must be related. But this other one, we don't know what
She's
happened
to her.
She's
definitely North Korean.
So there's some of that. Then you were the young, you were the youngest. You were the one that was like, ah, oh, she got mom's, all the good, pretty blonde mom genes. And is the smart one and is the one with the better grades and all this stuff. So Wendy got her box too.
Yeah.
Now that box has many positives, but your box is also weird because your box means if there's a family crisis or there's a big deal going on, everybody feels like they got to ask Wendy to resolve it.
Yeah. No one can make a stinking decision without my, yes, let's do that. Which is not a normal.
Don't ask Scott. He's too sensitive. Don't ask Matt. He's too busy and sweaty. Don't ask Misha because she's just like Matt. I mean, like, you know.
Yeah. Don't ask Tara because she's going to starve her people.
Yeah. Or she'll burn the house down or something. Like, there's all of these weird labels and stuff. And yeah. I know we're not the only ones. And then, so this exists in our family, but man, it sure exists in Kim's family. My wife's family is rife with this.
Yeah.
And she's supposed to be the rebellious one, which is a laugh.
Right.
Is a hoot that she's considered the rebellious one. It's all relative to what they thought was rebellious when she was growing up. But others in her family have different roles. And they to this day, they persist. And even I buy into them because I'm being told, oh, well, he's the man or whatever. Or she's the something something. And you just kind of go, oh, yeah, Julie never says anything and just dutifully does the dishes.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Which I have witnessed.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's something to see. But obviously that isn't all of Julie. That's not all she has to offer in this world. She's a wonderful mom. She's really smart. She's really sweet. She's a million things than just goofy, curly haired dish doer.
You all get together, everyone gets in pecking order. And you play
Why
the
did we
part.
Do this?
Well, this is why there are people who...
I hate this.
Never hang out with their families again at some point. Like, they don't... They really hate how that feels. They can't stand the box. It puts them back in. And then they act, you know, sort of act the part. Because it's very second nature, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to talk a little bit about birth order. Because, you know, I joke that everyone is standing in heaven going, okay, no, you're going to go to this family. Get in the middle child line.
Yeah.
Like, your personality comes out as a middle kid, right?
Yeah.
I also have a theory about third children, the third born, which is you, by the way.
Am I the third?
Not born, but the third in
order. Oh, the third kid in order.
They're always the funniest.
Hmm.
Name anyone who knows third. They're always funny.
Nick's kind of that too.
Nick's funny. He's also plays young, so he's youngest. So he's got
he
a dual
role
there.
Yeah.
But third kids are funny and easygoing and sweet. I guess you were sensitive, so I don't know.
Oh, that guy, that's cool. I think the sweet was in there.
Yeah. And then, anyway, they're always that way. And anyone I know who has a third baby, they're like, it's so amazing and sweet. I'm like, don't let it fool you. You'll have another.
So
and
is that
be
true in your case?
What totally. Elliot is
Elliot's
the sweetest
he's
human
the sweetest
being.
Sweetest kid, yeah.
And funny and makes everyone laugh and so cute.
So what's up with that?
And then Pete's the freaking devil.
what's the deal?
I don't know. But so let's read the official, like, what you're supposed to be like and where you're born.
Yeah.
So here's, I'm going to let you guess.
Okay.
Might be pretty obvious because I'm going to read them in order.
All right.
All right. You are a perfectionist, organized, conscientious. People often see you as the leader with strong drive and determination. You get good grades and you don't like surprises.
First kid, usually.
First kid.
That sounds like Taylor.
B. Oh, yeah, B's. That was A. So B, you are a mediator. You prefer to compromise and avoid conflict. Some people might even see you as a people pleaser. You're very sensitive to what others are feeling, and you're very loyal to your friends. Although you might be seen as one who has a considerable number of friends, you consider yourself to be a secretive person and feel like you do not get enough attention at all.
That sounds like middle kid, but this also sounding like a psychology experiment we did when I had a college course where they had everybody fill out a form. Uh-huh. We all turned them in. I feel like I've told this on the show. The teacher then picked up a couple of them and read it. Picked up one and said, all right, so this person is such and such, but they're also such and such. They went down this list and said, all right, now whose is this? And almost everybody's hand went up. And she went, this is like a fake one. this isn't any of yours.
Right.
In other words, it fit everybody.
Yeah.
If you read into it, it's like reading your palms.
Yeah.
It's like you really are looking for a relationship and love in your life, but you're also very like to be alone sometimes. It's everybody.
And
right?
You enjoy food and sleep.
So
is
this like that a little bit? A little bit.
Yes. But you can, I mean, there's enough research on this that you know, the way I'm reading it and the way this is written sounds more like that, but there really is a lot of stuff that backs up kind of oldest child behavior typically.
All right.
But our family is a great example of how, you know, it kind of, the lines can be a little bit blurry.
Yeah.
And it's based on sort of gaps between ages. So you're going to have like, you know, people have a family and then oops, they have a caboose way later.
Yeah.
They just, they're almost an only child. So there's going to be a different dynamic there.
That's or true.
People are a year apart. Mm-hmm. That creates a different dynamic than if you're 4 or 5 years apart or whatever.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that
middle- it does seem obvious to me that because the circumstances are different when you're the only kid for a minute and then there's a new kid brought in, that new kid's going to be different because the dynamic is different.
Everything's different. Okay. So it's trained in you. So I don't think it's people in line in heaven getting put in the right order.
No. That now seems like a silly idea.
Yeah, silly. Okay. Yeah. So that middle child mediator, in fact, there's a book about kind of the superpowers of middle kids and how they're really good. And you'll find them in different areas of business.
Yeah.
I always find that, you know, like super conservative, think they know everything people are oldest brothers.
Yeah.
I wonder who we're talking about. but that's in most cases. Like I'll meet someone and they'll be talking and I'll say, I'm just going to guess that you're an oldest child or you think, are you a middle child? Yeah. And usually it's right. And they're always like, how do you know? I'm like, well, middle children are usually pleasers because take a middle child. They have got to navigate the power differential with the oldest child and then the younger one. They have power, but
Carter could not be more of a middle ground pleaser,
totally
helper,
mediator, make it all good,
peacemaker,
totally right. Yeah, okay, so totally here's the next one. This does sound like a horoscope. Okay, you are an affectionate person. You love to charm people and maybe even manipulate them. You consider yourself to be the center of attention, and you often blame others for many things. You are creative, spontaneous, free spirited, and you love surprises.
That sounds like third.
That's the youngest
tail end kid.
Yeah, tail end. All right. And then how about this one? You are mature beyond your years. You are an achiever and self-motivated. You have very high expectations for yourself. You're afraid of failing at things and you're more comfortable around people who are older than you.
I would call that a only child.
Only child. Mm. So you can hear all those and go, wow, I have like
that a sounds little like bit Steve of everything. Jobs, by the way.
Is he an only child?
Yeah.
He was also adopted, right?
Hold on. Adopted only child, I believe. I don't think he had a sister. There's something in my head saying I could look it up, I guess.
Google. But
pretty close to being an only child and definitely adopted.
Right. So is it has an impact on personality developed, you know, birth order, absolutely development, but it is, it's not foolproof. It's not, you know, whatever. But it's interesting. I like to, when my, I have couples come in for therapy, I'm always like, so tell me about your family and tell me where you are in birth order. And the ones who seem to just, like knock it out of the park is one of them is the oldest and the other one is either the middle because the oldest needs to boss people around a little bit and the middle is happy to be bossed around a little bit or he's used to sort of not running the show. So two oldest is always pretty fun. Like, okay, how about on Tuesdays you get to be in charge and Wednesdays you get to be in charge.
Yeah. By the way, only child. Adopted and only child.
Ooh.
Yeah. I don't know what that means or says about him, but whatever.
He didn't play well with others. Actually, there's a... There's
he doesn't
actually,
play well with others.
There's a lot of research on single and only children, right? And,
yeah.
You know, people have always been, oh, no, that will make them blah, blah, blah. But they have a lot of skills that the rest of us with too many people fighting for food don't have.
I used to wish I was one. There was a time.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember specifically I was probably, I don't know, 10 or 11 or something. And I remember feeling overwhelmed by all the new Koreans that were showing up.
Every other minute.
Because that was the year or year later or whatever when Matt got here. And it was just so much work. And it just, and I felt like I was kind of his caretaker in a way.
Yeah.
Because I was the closest. I had to translate. I had to explain things. I had to explain to a principal at a school why anyone would poop in a urinal. Because that is the closest Korean toilet looking thing Matt could find. Oh, so he didn't know any better. And so a lot of that kind of stuff happened. And I remember feeling like, wouldn't it be cool? Because I had a friend, or I can't remember who it was, but I had a friend who was an only child. And it just felt like he got everything he needed when he needed it. There was never any argument about, well, your sister will give you your, or your older sibling will give you the thing they're going to hand down or any of that. It was just, that seemed like heaven to me.
Yeah.
I think that guy's kind of jacked up now, though. I don't want to say any names, but anyway, the point is that seemed like paradise for a while.
Yeah,
I wouldn't change the weird geodiversity of our family is the coolest thing ever. I don't want that to ever not be in my history now.
Right.
But at the time, it seemed
right
bonkers to me.
Right.
That we were doing
why
that.
There's so many people.
Yeah. And then there was you on the tail end, which the story, you know, the family story or the family legends were all, everyone had legends, and yours were, I can't believe she's even here with like 25,000 miscarriages before she was born. Like all exaggerated hyperbole about everybody's station in the family. And yeah, yours was that
I was
you
were
the miracle child that no one expected on the tail end of the baby making potential era or whatever. And in my case, I had a similar thing where mom was like, yeah, we had 9 miscarriages before you were born.
Yeah, and you should have died because I was bleeding the whole time.
Yeah, it was terrible. We thought you were dead a couple of times. And you know, and I'm like, well, is that why my left eye sucks so bad? You know, things like that.
Because it was bleeding in the womb.
It was mushed up against your hip bone or something. But she didn't, you know, she had that story. Everybody had that story.
Right. Well, then, and the one thing they did right is the stories were all, I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah.
And treated everyone kind of like a miracle that they got there. And even Tara, who, you know.
Well, remember, she was the third. She was like the weird, oh, no, we can't get more than 2 visas. That's just not the law. And then the great visa miracle that I've been told about my whole life.
Yeah, there's the visa miracle, right. And then the Matt miracle. Yeah. He's ready to be kicked out on the street. And, you know, Jake Garn is somebody sitting outside the door of the immigration office, and the guy who never changes his mind changed his mind. And anyway, but all of the stories combined to create, I think, what I think is really valuable in families. Mm. And that is we have a story. It's bigger than us. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And aren't we lucky?
Yeah.
Right. Cause it could have been deprivation, like too many bodies to feed. And the North Korean keeps ticking us all off. And she was hard, right?
She was hard.
She did some crazy stuff. but there's also like, you know, that way to be seen as so valuable. So that's how we do it. That's so anciently human, which is let's tell a story about origin. Let's tell the story about, you know, whatever.
See, this adds to the first guy's question a little bit, which is you've got the narrative, you have the story that's been told, and you've created this the thing that you can follow from beginning to end and find some real inspiration in it. There's challenge, but it's look at what we've
overcome,
done, and it's amazing. Well, this kid, all you're doing is giving this kid some more of his story.
Yeah.
And it's a real story, not some fake story.
Yeah. But you get to decide the spin, right? The power of the story is not the social shame of, oops, someone else got your mom pregnant while we were having a rough go.
Yeah.
And now blah, blah, blah. You can say, you can keep the realness and the truthfulness of it.
Yeah.
But see it as a gift and, you know, kind of reframe it so it's this lovely, amazing thing.
And you're not fooling the kid.
No.
That is literally what it is.
Yeah,
You took what could be this social
terrible
mess
thing
and turned it into something rad.
Absolutely.
So he should be told exactly what it is, which is something rad.
Right.
So I not to go all the way back to the top of the show, but I just feel like that's the answer there. But in cases like this whole sibling order thing, normally it's the oldest who gets put in charge of things.
Yep. In our case, the oldest was way older.
The oldest is 10 years older than me.
17 years older than me.
Oh, that's weird.
He was just like a super conservative uncle.
Well, he was. But see, that's the thing is when I was growing up, I always thought my older brother was super, super liberal.
Like, Mark?
Oh, yeah. The way he fought and railed against like
the machine
and the like religion and just like was so anti everything.
Yeah.
And he's the one that would drink, and he's the one that would carouse around and do stuff and be experimental. And he was being a hippie, really.
Yeah. He had the hair.
That all changed.
Well, and he told me this one day. He's like, Wendy, when you make a bunch of money.
So it's all about when you make money.
Then you will be conservative. And I said, dude, I will never make a bunch of money. Yeah. And he's, you know, he's got his guns and he's hugging them and stuff. Yeah. But he rebelled. And maybe now this is, you know, whatever. Who knows? But he also was out of the house when I got there.
He
was 17 and furious when I was born because how embarrassing.
I was 8 and I remember some of the furiousness and then he was gone too.
Yeah, then
like
he was
even
gone.
For me, he was gone. To me, I felt like the oldest for a lot of my life, which is weird because I knew I wasn't. Maybe that's the thing.
Yeah.
The dynamic flipped because he was the oldest and left. And he's from a different marriage from my mom's side from before she met my dad.
Yeah.
So it's not the same parents even. So that felt foreign, but still there was somebody there who was like, the older one making decisions and
giving
being
you
in
wedgies.
Charge, giving me wedgies, making me feel terrible, whatever, at the time. Mark hears this. It's fine
we
now.
We like you, Mark.
We love you now. But at the time, you were kind of rude to me when I was a kid. Picked on me a lot.
See, we're still scared of him.
Still a little bit scared. He's going to give me a wedgie so bad it's going to
make it so bad it's not kids anymore.
That's what you call a swedgie. But anyway, so he's gone, and then I'm oldest, kind of.
Yeah.
Even when Matt comes, I'm oldest, because Matt doesn't know.
Yeah.
He's just bumping around
and
going,
and we made up his age anyway.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even know. We still really don't know.
We made up his birthday.
Yeah. For all I know,
it's
he's
the
younger
Korean
than me.
National holiday. Just like, hey, July 4th? Okay, that's your birthday.
Yeah. People are always like, Matt, you look great for 46. I'm like, he might be 40.
We don't know.
We really don't know what he is. So so I felt like I had to manage that, and then... Yeah. I don't know. It's a
weird
thing.
But you came
thing.
With your middle child characteristics.
I did.
But you were forced to play the oldest.
Yeah. I kind of resent it, to be honest.
Oh, my gosh.
A little
resentment.
A little resentment.
Whereas I am in the final.
I'm the last.
And so I get a lot of freedom from, you know, I get a lot of freedom. Fortunately, mom and dad had no money. So spoiling me didn't do any permanent damage. It was like, here's $5. That was spoiling.
Yeah.
But a lot of freedom because they were tired. Which I loved. And then Tara's just above me creating havoc.
Yeah, she got all the attention.
So I just thought, I'll do everything different from her, which made me get some of the oldest child stuff, which is like, I'm very responsible. I get my schoolwork done because no one's checking on me.
Right.
And that all worked out great. So I feel like I have a good blend, but it's so funny how it rears its head when we're together. And
so
suddenly,
now we're older. Okay. So now we're in, you know, the my dad had died in 2000. My mom is 75. She's married to a very cranky 80 something year old now, who I guess is our, what is he?
He's John.
Okay. He's John.
You
he's
get
Grandpa
the right
John.
To call people what you want.
I'm not going to call him what he wants me to call him. But anyway, so he's this guy and that's great and all that stuff's fine. But what has happened is where I used to shoulder a lot of it, I still, when there's family decisions that need to be made, I still feel that, but I have decided now.
To let Wendy do it.
No, not just that. Not just shove it off to Wendy. I go, I don't have time to deal with this. And I'm out of there.
Yeah.
But you, all the Johnsons
That's
always
the young,
feel.
That is the youngest quality, by the way.
Is it?
What you just decided. Which is like, woohoo, fun, bye, see ya.
Well, for me, I don't do it with any kind of glee. No. I do it with like, ugh, it weighs on me. Yeah. But also, it drives me crazy to have to manage old people who are behaving like teenagers. So that stuff, I just go, you know what? Let me know when you're over this and come talk to me. It's not like they're having, you know, this isn't a condition.
Right.
They're choosing to act like children. Right. So when they do that, I just kind of go, I'm off. And that leaves you holding the bag in a way. Because what are the Koreans going to do?
Well, Misha and I play, you know,
you guys tag
role,
team a lot.
Which is like, does anyone even want to hear this? Like, no.
Yeah, of course they do. Because all this does is it helps people relate. Because there are people listening to this right now. They're like, oh, that is so my family.
Right.
Or that is so the thing we do. Or we definitely have this hierarchy problem or right. whatever. I mean, all it does to me is prove that there's no such thing as a set way for any of this stuff to go.
No. And even birth order, like, oh, okay, everyone's playing their role with birth order. We just have some of those tendencies, I think, but it's also not a box. It's not a trap. You can do it differently. I do think, I mean, I hear stories about this a lot where people just aren't connected to their families anymore. They just sort of can't do it anymore because those boxes are so rigid or it's painful to be around each other or nothing shifts or moves. And, you know, there's a whole generation, sorry, mom, but there's a whole generation of 75-year-old the baby boomers, everyone knows I hate, who are such martyrs and victims of everything. And my kids don't call me enough and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I think, you know, some of that comes from, you know, they were sort of center of the universe in the 70s for you know, their kids and their families. And that's just not the case anymore. We move around the country. Yeah. We're not living next door anymore. There's lots of different things that have occurred. But, you know, it's sort of like there's all these symbols everywhere of sort of a generational shift, which is interesting because what happens when the millennials are then retiring? What's the dynamic then? I'd just be
it's
interesting over time
yeah.
where this all goes. But so
we're all bracing for when you go to Sweden for 2 years, by the way.
I know.
Because it means
who's going to make a decision?
Someone's going to have to pick up whatever that slack is.
They're going to have to wait until.
The problem is, I'm just going to be an ass about it.
I'm awake.
I don't mind doing it, but I'm just going to. My mode these days is just to say it like it is,
right.
And that does not go over well with this type archetype you're talking about. and they think it means all sorts of betrayal and everything else when I'm just being honest about something. Right. So maybe it'll be good. Maybe it'll be good. You'll be gone. Everyone will look to the other white kid in the family. And I'll just say things like, buck up. Just, you're 85. You should have learned some of these things.
Whoa. Is there a way to not let anyone listen to this episode? This is not going to be good.
They won't hear this one until you're on a plane and on your
way. Which is good. And I'll just say, it's the time zone. I can't answer your phone. So there's another thing here, though, which is this idea. When somebody dies, this happens in a really sort of obvious way. But if you imagine everyone sort of holding on to, you remember Cat's Cradle, where you take yarn and you do the things with your fingers?
Yeah.
And you have all these sort of interweaving of rope or whatever. Right. Imagine everyone holding on to a piece of a rope in a family. You're all connected because you're family. And somebody lets go, whether it's through death or they just separate themselves from the family or whatever. And you can just sort of visualize everyone kind of falling and trying to catch themselves. And what do I do now? You know? And you just readjust and people sort of shift roles and you start to figure out, wow, how do we function now? And we had to do that when Dad died. You have to do it throughout your life. But it really is interesting because you don't maybe consciously think, oh, I'm playing the role of president of all the decisions in this family. But I am.
Yeah.
And I get put there and I can choose to accept the assignment or not. But my natural tendency is to be like, yeah, let me tell y'all what to do.
Accept the assignment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you cannot accept the assignment. And that makes everyone have to shift and adjust. And you know, there's a lot of toxic, weird stuff that goes on between families because we really want you to be the way you were. Like, we want you to play that role.
Yeah.
And when you don't, who's going to play the sensitive guy role? Who's going to play
who's not going to do that?
The decision-making goal. So when Tara comes to family stuff and she's super nice, we're all confused.
It's all a little uncanny valley.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Do I believe it? What do I do? Whatever.
Yeah. Because that's outside that box.
It's a little simplifying. I think it's just lazy thinking, to be honest.
And then when she does something angry or whatever.
We're like, hello again.
Oh, phew. Everything's back the rightful normal. Order of the universe is here.
Right. And then let Wendy solve it.
Who lives closest? Wendy Kay. She's dealing with it.
Which is your excuse. But even if I live the furthest, which I will soon, you'll all still be like, so Wendy, what do you think we should tell Tara? I'll be like, I don't care. Tell her whatever you want.
I know what to say.
Right.
But no one wants me to say.
Here's the other thing. You said, let the other white kid talk. That's so you and I,
revealing statement.
You and I play, and it's not about racism.
No, it's not.
It's about roles you and I both have picked up. We have three quiet, shy, kind. Well, Tara's not quiet. Tara's is another thing. But those two, very quiet.
She's quiet in her own way.
And just not super opinionated.
Sure.
And you and I are like, oh, there's airtime. Let's chat.
You have to fill the space. We have to fill the emptiness. You can't just sit like Matt and chill.
Yeah.
I can't.
Which is why you and I can BS through a show like this.
Yeah. We can totally wing our way through 12 episodes of something.
Right.
And actually have something meaningful poop out on the other side. It's just that it's also part of that energy of I can't just sit here.
Right. But then you say, okay, so that role we've kind of always played, the family comedians. Yeah. And I'm your the dude next to Dave Letterman. What's his name?
Paul Schaefer.
Yeah, I'm your Paul.
The dude next to Paul. David Letterman.
Oh my gosh. That guy. Like, so
you're Paul Schaefer.
So it sort of works out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's any family. I mean, anyone listening to this could probably sit down and write out like, okay, my brother Jim plays this role and da, 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 da. Uh-huh. And what's interesting is to have the meta conversations with each other about this.
Yeah.
You know, what is that like for you to feel pigeonholed as the hard worker or the quiet one or the got to be the funny one, or because everyone gets tired of playing a role.
Uh-huh.
And not everyone feels like they're acting. It's not necessarily that it's fake or something, but they feel pressure. Like, oh, you want me to do that thing I always do.
I think part of it is when I am perceived by some as doing an insensitive thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's just not responding or I can't go or, you know, something small. Part of me, if I'm being truthful here, part of me enjoys that sensation of A, being out of the box for a second.
Yep.
In some kind of weird defiance that I never had before, and having the other person feel how it feels to wonder, and was it, can I fix this? Is it, what's going on? Like that. So I get some weird satisfaction out of that. I don't like doing it because I feel bad, but I don't, but I have to admit there is something there that says, how's that feel?
Yeah.
A little bit.
So here's this, that's a great description of setting boundaries.
Yeah.
And crucial for people's mental health and well-being is to set boundaries that are healthy and appropriate in their life. Right.
Uh-huh.
Because they're so overcome with the, oh no, I've did that wrong because I've never done that before, or I'm going to be in trouble, or I feel guilty or something. There is the flip side, which is that kind of feels good, right? Mm-hmm. So you just had the benefit of setting a boundary, but you're going to pay the price for it, right?
Right.
And you kind of, people have to calculate, you know, is that price worth it? So the other day, Tara had some things happening and the whole family, boobity badoo. And I'm like, people, I have zero energy for you or this.
Right.
Because it's true.
Yeah.
And I got to get me and my four kids to Sweden. And so Misha called me and is trying to convince me of the stuff she's figured out. Like she's reporting to the CEO. That's how it was.
That's what she's doing.
And I just sat there for a minute and I was like, you know, I don't care. And she's like, what? I said, you know what? It's your opinion. You can do whatever. I'm just totally going to go now. And wow. I had the exact same thing you just described, which is, holy crap, this is liberating.
Yeah, it is kind of.
Liberating. And she could tell. She was like, and I love Misha, and I want to support her.
Right. I still dwell on it as my problem. So I can't just turn my head and go the other way.
Right.
Like, I feel bad. I have to figure out a way to make it up. I still feel like that's going on.
Right.
But that initial, like, nope.
Yeah.
Not this time.
See, and you're a middle kid, so you get that extra bonus. And I'm the youngest kid, so I can go, peace out.
Yeah, you can do it and actually probably go to the beach and pretend nothing's going on.
But I don't think if I didn't have the Sweden excuse, I could do it.
Really?
Because I believe I am actually overcommitted and overwhelmed, and one more Tara drama I can't handle. I believe that. But
right.
I have to believe that. And if I wasn't going to Sweden, I wouldn't be in that position. So I probably still would be acting
that's
CEO.
Interesting. That's interesting. I like that you called it the Sweden excuse.
Yeah, because it is, dude.
We're going to call it that from now on.
You need me to do what for the PTA? I'm going to Sweden.
Going to Sweden. And you're going to be there for 2 years, right?
2 years, yeah.
At the minimum.
Yeah.
Maybe more.
Maybe more.
How are the... This is a weird place to ask this because we're not talking about this, but how... Do the kids perceive what this is? Do they know what this is?
Well, here's an interesting...
Because it's a...
Psychology about this. Because
whole new country.
It is. And they've you know, they've been to California,
yeah.
And they've been to Georgia,
yeah.
And we've driven a little bit around back east. So they've been to a bunch of states. They just don't remember.
Some of them lived in
Vermont. Allie lived in Vermont. Yeah. That was it. She was little.
Oh, so Abraham wasn't.
Nah, he was born here. So they really have no idea. So they can't even be like, oh, it was like the time we moved to Texas or something.
It won't stop Elliot from trying to still talk that way about it, though.
No. Oh, gosh. He is terrifying. Did I tell you about he figured out that if there were murderers in our family?
Yeah, I heard about this.
He said, what if we can't tell if there's murderers in our family because of saboteurs? And I'm like, oh, okay, well.
remember, everyone, he's five.
He's five, yeah.
He's five.
And he suddenly is like looking at every family member like, who knows? They could be a murderer.
Anyone could be a murderer.
So then I said, buddy, no one's a murderer. And if they are, we'll deal with it when we find out. And he says, well, then I'm going to get me a new family.
Yeah.
I said, but what if there's one in that family?
And oh, my
kind of blew
gosh.
His little mind.
Yeah, you're going to blow his mind at five. Yeah. Here's the problem, though, or here's the question, because it relates to this. You're taking him to Sweden. They've got a brand new family dynamic.
Yeah.
That involves a huge fundamental change to
their life. We don't speak the language.
Life.
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully, there's a lot of English speakers in Sweden. But yeah. Not the other way around, but they're going to be in a place that's just completely culturally different. They're going to have all these new experiences, which is good. It's part of what you want to do with them. But you know, what happens when Abe's 17 and going, let's say they were there that long. Yeah, I hate it. That was the worst 3 years of my life. Whatever. Like, all these things are interesting to me because we're just recycling the same historic thing every family ever in the history of time has ever had to go through. It's just what social mores are in place to make it. So, like, I'm watching this World War II miniseries, and I couldn't tell you how many scenes there are of men welcoming their sons home or sending them off to World War II with a firm handshake and a good luck, son.
Yeah.
Ridiculous to me.
Right.
Like, that could, I don't know if my dad's to thank, I guess, because his dad was like that.
Yeah.
But Dad wasn't. Hugged us, let us know he loved us all the time. There's never any question. And if you're going off to war to fight the quote-unquote Japs, this show was rife with that use. But when that if that was happening and we were doing what you believed to be the greatest thing you could do for your country at the time, we're all patriots and everything, and the best you get is a handshake and a good luck, son.
Yeah.
And then the look in these guys' eyes, these 17 to 18-year-old boys just going, you know.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
But we live in a time now where that's not at all the case. So, yes, those things change, but I feel like the core thing you're talking about here about order and labels and boxes has existed since the beginning of time.
It has. And yeah, it has. I think there's also a thing here. This is happening with the Sweden thing is so Adam and
Ishmael, your brother is the stabby one. He's the one I'm going to stab. You're the
you're this guy.
You're the other one.
You're the and then the baby. I think, you know, the babies, the last child, there is something that happens where you're just like, "Oh, I'm going to just enjoy every dang minute."
Cuz this is it.
But I'm not going to take a dang picture of you because I don't have time. PS.
We have way less pictures of you.
I know, right? So anyway,
I have way less pictures of Nick. Thankfully, the rest of the world's all taking pictures now, so there's pictures of Nick everywhere.
Fine. Yeah. So anyway, Adam and I were talking about this the other day. We are going to Sweden on purpose. There is no duress. It is all choice. It's a terrible financial decision, by the way, everyone. Yeah,
but it's something you want to do.
We want to do it, and we're valuing the experience over, you know, the cost benefit. We just think is wonderful. Anyway, we're crazy, but we're doing it. But it's all good, and it's our choice, and all that, right?
Sure,
well,
sure.
When he and I were both about the same ages,
yeah.
I don't know how old you would have been, but. I was in fourth grade. We moved because of Dad losing his company.
Oh, I remember all this vividly.
Terrible stuff. Yeah, yeah. And powerless. And now we're in this new place. And all da, 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 da.
I would have been 15.
Yeah. It's a rough age. Yeah.
It was hard.
Yeah. And I was 10, about 10. So
it sucked.
9 or 10. And Adam had the same thing. His dad lost his job in Ohio and they had to move to Georgia. And he still has this awesome entry. Like his dad. Oh, he had his journal or something and it wrote, this is awesome. This is so 80s. My gay dad lost his stupid job and now he's bossing everyone around.
He called him his gay dad.
Yeah, so that's everyone's favorite phrase. My gay dad lost his stupid job.
Well,
and now
in the
80s,
we used that word completely meaningless.
I know.
It wasn't even tied to like anything.
I know. Just
It was so stupid.
It was the in-between stage between gay meant happy.
Dude, your car is so gay. That's what we'd say.
I know, right?
So dumb.
I don't think I even knew what it meant ever. Either one, the 50s definition or the...
I cannot imagine your husband saying that for some reason.
Oh.
Not the gay word. I just mean the
being
that,
pissed?
That thing.
Oh, he was so angry because it's his dad's fault that they're moving and he's going from being a Yankee to a... You know, he's going to be a Yankee in the South, which they made that very clear that he was not welcome. And he also played soccer, so he was a commie. And he was smart, so he was a goody-two-shoes or whatever, you know. So it was a very difficult, it represented change and loss and heart. Well, Adam and I are completely, like, don't even think that this would be hard for our kids because it's all based on fun and challenge and new, and we're doing this for fun. There is no loss in our minds. There's no, like, forcing. This is a group decision. You know, our childhood experiences can't even compete with this. So we have sort of failed to go, hey guys, like, you all right?
Yeah, how you feel about it?
Yeah, and then Abe can't go to sleep last night. I'm like, tell me what's wrong. He's like, I'm just thinking about Sweden. I'm like, crap,
dude.
Yeah, and he doesn't play soccer. It'll be the opposite. Yeah. So they'll think he's
if you don't play soccer,
bro.
You suck.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Anyway, so it's a little bit of like same stuff, just different colors. And every one of us as parents takes our own experience, overlays it on our kids, even unconsciously, and then goes like, your life is so much better. Shut your yapper.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of, wow, this is just as real for you. I am dragging you to another
country. Or maybe more real, just because, you know, I mean, it's more vivid. When you're a kid, everything's more vivid.
Yeah.
Your first scary movie, your first time on the diving board, your first time seeing a girl in that way for the first time or whatever. It's intense.
Yeah.
So the first time moving to Sweden for 2 years. That's an enormous thing.
I know, right?
It may not be for the youngest of them. Pete's probably going to love it.
Oh, he already speaks Swedish. Have you heard him talk?
It's
bizarre.
Basically Swedish. He's blonde.
Yeah.
He's pale white.
He's so glow in the dark. They will love him there.
I mean, these are our people. He is loud. This is our,
And this is mom's side of the family, right? Yeah. Or dad's even.
Yeah, we're pure Swedish on one line of mom.
Yeah, it's the line that a slight sunburn means possible skin cancer a week later. That's the line. That's the side we're on. Well, it's fascinating stuff. I just feel like family dynamics are interesting, and they don't, I don't know. While they can come back to haunt people, they also are things you like. I like everyone else's labels.
Right.
Like I like the new ones for in-laws and things that have joined the family, extended family. I like Oaknon a lot. She's crazy, but I love it.
Right.
I don't want her to ever change. I want her to always have those quirks.
Right.
And I like those things about another. I have some in-laws where I'm like, oh, okay. but still, on the whole, these are the things that make us who we are. And we always talk. You're always talking about how human beings need a story.
Yeah.
To survive. That's why we love movies and books. And I mean, we have to have stories.
Yeah.
And if that's true, everything is one. And why not family dynamics? So I just find that stuff super, super interesting.
Yeah.
So to go back to the dude at the beginning of the show, you've got this son who you love and you care about. Give him the story that's the most real and the one that's told from the person he trusts the most. That's better than him learning by accident or finding out his blood doesn't match in an ER. That sucks. That is the worst episode of ER ever.
It is.
And that probably happened actually on that show.
Yeah.
If I was to go back and
find it. And it's probably happened in real life.
Hopefully you guys enjoyed the show. If you want to learn more about the show and check other episodes, go make sure you go to frogpants.com/therapy. I think that's it. We don't know what we're doing next week, do we? We don't have a topic yet. But we'll think of it.
It'll be great.
You'll be all surprised. Thanks everybody who supported us throughout all of this. We are at the halfway mark, ladies and gentlemen. 6 more episodes to go in the therapy show. That's going to do it for us. I'm Scott. That's Wendy. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.